Spirited Back, Whether You Like It or Not, written by Safely Capricious and read by K-Burb. This is a DC Marvel crossover fic, rated mature, in which no archive warnings apply. It features the relationship between Natasha and Jason, and is additionally tagged with time travel, sibling relationships, Jason and Natasha are siblings, forgiveness, fantasy, picnics, bugs and insects, guilt, soulstone, post-endgame, all cast Jason Todd, unreliable narrator, and reality bending. The landscape stretches, close enough to be identical in every direction. There is an orange cast to the sky and the ground and everything that seems both predictable and cliche, and if Jason knew who to complain to about it, he'd be at their door at 3 a.m. Fortunately, there's no one to complain to, because he does have bigger fish to fry. Like finding his sister. His sister who he doesn't remember beyond a few vague memories of someone holding him close. His sister who he learned about through the Allcast, through visions of his past. His sister who did her best to save him, even though she was only 7 to his 3, and then when she'd heard he'd died, promptly turned around and rained bloody vengeance on the one responsible. His sister who Batman treated like a rogue and tried, and failed, to put down like he wouldn't put down the one responsible for his son's death. His sister, who he'd only just met, again, before he'd been snapped away, and his sister who sacrificed herself to save the world, to bring him back. His sister whose team had just accepted her as gone, and Jason hadn't shot Captain Steve Rogers in the face when he'd stolen the Soul Stone he'd been intent on returning. He'd shot him in the leg instead. He was a super soldier. He'd recover. And if Natasha was pissed about him shooting her teammate, well, at least she'd be alive to be pissed off about it. The landscape undulates under his feet, feeling spongy, as he walks through the puddles that stretch in every direction. The water splashes up onto his legs, but leaves behind the sensation of dry instead of wet. It makes his body feel fake, like it's not connected, like this reality isn't real. He's sure that's on purpose. He traveled back to right after her sacrifice, once he'd stolen the stone from Rogers before he could return it. He was there at the final battle, of course, teleported in from Wakanda, and he just kept looking for her, and he could see how tired they all were, her Avengers, but he doesn't think he will ever forgive them for just giving up. And for all that Rogers had protested when Jason had shown up, he could see the defeat in the set of his shoulders and curl of his mouth. For all that they won, they lost as well. Jason certainly isn't a stranger to Pyrrhic victory. Jason, or maybe just Gothamites, or maybe all bats, scrabble their victory out of shit all the time. Jason wouldn't know what to do with a win that didn't have any regrets to it. The sky hasn't changed, and it's still just flat marshlands. Vaguely reminiscent, Jason realizes suddenly, to that scene in Lord of the Rings on the old battlefield, and he half expects to see a face when he looks down again into the water, but there's nothing there but his own reflection. Only it's not really his reflection, is it? It winks at him as he stares, and the hair is dark all the way through. He's also, in the reflection, wearing a black cat suit, and that's, huh, he thinks, staring down at the dead eyes below him. Is that really who he would be if Natasha hadn't smuggled him out of the Red Room before his training could begin? He's prettier than Jason is. No scars on his face and no wrinkles to be seen, but it's not just that. There was work done, Jason realizes, as he looks at a face that's not his but is his, and when he manages to jerk his attention away, his neck hurts. This fucking place is making him pull a Narcissus, and he's not going to let it. The landscape has changed around him, while he was looking at the self that isn't. There are trees now, in every direction, but also there. Under a tree, he sees red instead of orange, and when he heads in that direction, the image resolves itself like the ripples of a pool settling, so he can see the bottom and... "What are you doing here, little bunny?" his sister asks him, in Russian, from the checkered blanket she's settled on. There's a basket next to her, so stereotypically picnic that it looks fake. He takes his time, looking her over. He hardly knows her, and that's no one's fault. Or, well, if it is, it's the fault of the Red Room. But he wonders if she ever felt guilty for doing it, for sending him away before he could remember her. He sometimes feels guilty that she felt the need to. He looked into the Red Room once when he learned about her, and he never found out what they did for her running away with him and hiding him, but he can't imagine they let it pass unremarked, that she didn't suffer for it. "This isn't really you, is it?" he asks, rhetorically in the same language, as he settles down on the blanket. He doesn't know how long he's been walking, and maybe sitting down is the wrong choice. But he knows himself, and he'll be able to get up again if he needs to. She teeter-totters her hand and shrugs. "Yes and no. No and yes. I do not exist. I will always exist. There is a piece of me here, and a piece of me there." She points at him, at his chest, at his heart. "I will get her back," he says, to the being that is both his sister and a manifestation of the Soul Stone, of this place that has stolen her. The being, his sister, tilts her head, and red hair, somewhat muted in the orange light, spills over her shoulder like blood. "I am tired, little brother." "So you'll take some extra naps once you're alive again," Jason says with a shrug. "I'm not going to believe anything you say here, so we're clear. And if you hate me, then at least you'll be alive to do it." Her eyes sharpen even as she reaches into the picnic basket and begins to pull out Tupperware containers. "I could never hate you. I thought maybe you would hate me for giving you away for everything." "You were a kid," Jason says, fiercely, leaning forward, "doing the best you could. I was a baby. You had no reason to think I would survive the Red Room, and you gave me the best chance you could, and I could have tried to go with you, to keep you safe from everything, but I couldn't." "They wouldn't have stopped coming after us. You knew that." He takes one of the containers she hands him and opens it, and an avalanche of cockroaches scurries out of it and over his hand and over the picnic blanket, and they vanish as soon as they touch the ground, and then the container is holding a single lock of dark hair. "You did the best you could," he repeats as he puts the container down. "You died," she said softly. "You died, and I wasn't there."
"And you died," he returns, gesturing around them. "And I wasn't there for that.
But you were there after you killed him for me. And I'm here now, and I'm not going to let you stay here." He touches his chest where the all-cast tattoo glows brightest. "I won't let you." She hands him another container, and when he opens this one, there's a flood of centipedes, or maybe millipedes, and scorpions and spiders and too many legs and danger. They vanish when they hit the ground as well, and when he looks down, there's a hand in the Tupperware. Not detached or bloody, but reaching up from the void below, and he reaches for it, and he pulls, and the world turns inside out and rotates, and up is down, and down is sideways, and everything is paisley, and... "What did you do?" his sister gasps from the rocky outcropping beside him.
"What I had to do," Jason says, and grins at her, her hand held securely in his.
The end.
If you had your gun.